Today I'm going to talk about KK therapy in work, extra dimension, and this is work collaborated with Tao Tsuyogashi, Adam Tsuyogashi, and Geraldine Servan. We are hoping to finish the paper really soon. Really soon. Okay? So, the outline of the talk is, of course, first I will start with the motivation, why I want to implement KK parity in warp extra dimension. And then I will try to explain to you just what the desired KK spectrum should look like. And then by looking at the first three KK modes in the low energy, I want to focus on low energy effective theory of that first three KK modes by using a three-side toy model just to understand the behavior of the extra dimension. And so this three-side toy model can really be considered the three-side deconstruction of full-fledged extra-dimensional setup. So after that, I'll just give you discuss two obvious possibilities for implementing our strategy. And one is what we call both are full-fledged extra-dimensional setup, and one is what we call IR-UV-IR setup, and the second one is what we call UV-IR-UV setup. And I can tell you in advance that I will spend, in fact, not too much time on the second setup, the UVIR setup, because as I will explain to you, there is a gravitational instability in this UVIR, UV setup that is very troublesome. Then finally, I will finish with some conclusion and discussion. And
that clock doesn't work.
Does it run at all?
I don't think so. It's been
okay.
Like that for the whole day.
All right. Just good that you would say that. So motivation.
It's like somebody dropped it.
We all know that there's tons of models for theories beyond the standard model nowadays, and there are many ways to slice this quote-unquote space of BSM theories. And one way to slice it is to see whether there is a supersymmetry or not in your model. And for supersymmetric theories, we know that there is MSSM, there is NMSSM, there is below NMSSM, UMSSM, etc., etc. And whereas for non-supersymmetric theories, we have flat extra dimensions such as ADD and UED type of models, and we have warp extra dimension, which people usually call the RS1, the Randall syndrome of the first RS type of model. And there's also composite Higgs model like Nilo Higgs and holographic Higgs, and also for people who don't believe in the Higgs, there is of course Higgsless theory, and etc. etc. And so when you look at this way of slicing the space of models, it's obvious that for supersymmetric theories, essentially they are all cousins of MSSM. These N, big N and MSSM, Nilo N and MSSM, etc. They are all cousins of MSSM. And whereas for the non-supersymmetric theories, initially when you look at this map, it appears that there is a wide range of variety, which is contrast to the supersymmetric case. In SUSY, it's all essentially variations of MSSM. But what people are beginning to realize is that, given all these very different variety, it appears that, these all different type of theories, they are all related to one another either via ADS-CFT or deconstruction. So, some people even advocate something called M theory that one of the authors is sitting in the audience. So, but then the idea is really that instead of thinking it in terms of a very wide variety of models, we should really think of all these different holographic Higgs, Little Higgs, RS1, UEDs. We should really think of it having a continuous spectrum of theories that that somehow they are all related to each other. In one way or another. Okay? So it turns out, after all, even for the non-supersymmetric theories, there is also a very continuous range of spectrum, and somehow they are still related to each other, and they are not as different as they initially appear. Okay? And so that's one way to look at it. And another way to slice this space of beyond standard model theories is to look at whether there is a new symmetry at the TEV scale that acts as a parity. For example, you know, and if there are theories that has a new parity at the TEV scale, and very familiar example is the R parity in SUSY, and also, you know, other examples such as KK parity in flat extra dimensional or UED type of model, and there is also T parity in the little Higgs. And of course, contrary to theories that has a new parity at the TEV scale, there are theories that do not have a new parity at the TEV scale. And such examples are, you know, again, warped extra dimensional RS1. I'll be using these two terms equivalently in this talk. And also holographic Higgs, Higgs-less theory, and gauge Higgs unification, etc., etc. Okay, so that's another way to slice this space of BSM models. And so if I combine these two way of slicing the models that I just told you, you know, and in fact, they are two very interesting viewpoints that I would like to talk about here. First is a more top-down viewpoint, that is, if we believe there is a continuous spectrum in the space of non-supersymmetric theories, okay, then, you know, there ought to be ways to implement Z2 parity in models other than just little Higgs and UED. In other words, so on the left-hand side, these are the theories that a version of theories that do not have a Z2 parity. And you know, people have argued that these theories, they are all related to each other. And on the right-hand side, we know that for UED, we can try to implement KK parity. For little Higgs, we can try to implement T parity. So if we really believe that it's a continuous range of spectrum, then you know, there ought to be a Z2 parity version of the theories that such as holographic Higgs or RS1 or Higgs-less theories, that, you know, so that we can go from one to the other, you know, via either ADS-CFT or deconstruction. Okay, so that's one top-down viewpoint of why, you know, I strongly suspect there are ways to implement a parity version of all these theories that do not currently have a new parity at the TEV scale. Okay, so that's one way to look at it. And there is also a bottom-up viewpoint to look at it, in the sense that the collider signatures of theory with and without a Z2 parity, they are essentially two disconnected sets. Okay, and for models that has a new Z2 parity, such as R parity, you know, the implication of the collider signature is such that all the parity R particles, they have to be pair produced. And moreover, you know, once these new particles they are pair produced, you know, they'll cascade decay into standard model particles, which are result in multiple jets and multiple leptons, as well as missing ET. And this missing ET just comes from the lightest parity R particle if it's neutral, and this just so happens that it's a good dark matter candidate, just like LSP in supersymmetric theories, they're a good dark matter candidate, and in the collider they show up as missing ET. So what this is implying is, if there's a new Z2 parity in your theory, then you always see pair production of parity R particles, and they always cascade decay into the lightest parity R particle. So this suggests that events with new particles, they're always associated with missing ET that are carried away by this dark matter candidate. Okay? So that's the case for new Z2 parity. Whenever you produce new particles, you always see missing ET. Okay? And as a contrast to that, if there's no new Z2 parity in your theory, then the new particles, they can be singly produced, and therefore they tend to have a small number of jet multiplicity. Moreover, they might not have a dark matter candidate which shows up as missing ET. And of course, people try to implement a dark matter in models such like the RS1 model, which do not have a Z2 parity. So you can do that. You can try to implement the dark matter in those kind of models, but the point is, this dark matter, it does not necessarily show up in every single event. So the contrast of this is that, you know, if there's no new Z2 parity, not every event with new particles will be associated with missing ET. Okay, so just to give you an example, recently people talk about discovering the first KK gluon in the RS1 model through its decays into two top quarks. Okay, so these people, Lily Randall, when they show you this plot, that if you, the KK gluon is a 2 TeV, you see a resonance here, you know, 3 TeV, you see a resonance here, etc., etc. Even though, you know, people have criticized this study that, you know, it's, this plot is kind of misleading in the sense that this is a KK gluon decay to the TT bar pair, and they assume that the efficiency for reconstructing the TT bar is 100%. So that's why you see this nice bump. But the purpose here is just to show you the idea of how to see these as the single production of KK gluon. And take the closer look at this, you know, in the LHC, this KK gluon can be produced through the, you know, QQ bar annihilation, and then single produced going to TT bar. Okay? So the point of this example is to show you that, you know, if these TT bar, usually the top quad decays into W plus B. So if the W also decay hadronically, this top would the decay into all hadronic events. So you see each top give you roughly, if you count lightly, each top give you 3 jet events. So 2 tops give you 6 jet events with no missing ET, because every particle here that decays hadronically. So in this case, you will see this event as a quote-unquote 6 jet event without missing ET. So this says that, you know, again, the point I want to contrast here, if there's no new parity at the TV scale, you should see some new events associated with a new particle that do not have missing ET. Whereas if there's always a new Z2 parity that can SUSY, then you always see missing ET. Okay, so that's the contrast here.
Why are you choosing the TT bar finance thing?
Oh, it's just, this is the, I think, that's the strong, that I think that's the, in terms of, they found that this is just give you the largest branching ratio or something like that. That's the example they used to study. And I think another reason
I think it's the warped extra dimension.
I was going to say the overlap. The overlap is the largest. Right. So the KK gluon has a wave function localized in the IR. And if you also manage for the top to be localized in the IR, that gives the largest overlap.
Fermion
is in the bulk, except that the top is close to the IR. Right. Okay? So then, in this case, it's very important to understand whether RS-like model that could be implemented with the KK parity. And because if we find that they cannot be implemented with the KK parity, and suppose LAC, we always observe missing ET in a new physics event, then one could use missing ET to immediately disfavor, you know, classes model which cannot accommodate a new Z2 parity. Okay? And currently, classes model that do not have a new parity are the RS1 model, holographic Higgs model, Higgsless, gauge Higgs unification, etc., etc. Okay, so again, just to repeat, the point here is that, you know, since missing ET is really the first new physics signal we try to look for once we turn on LHC, and you can just immediately see whether all the new events they have associated missing ET. Okay, if that's the case, then obviously, you know, we can immediately disfavor whatever models that do not come with a new parity in such a way that you always see missing ET. Okay? So that's pretty much the motivation. So the goal of this work is just to see if one could implement KK parity in warp extra dimensional setups such as the RS-like models. And for now, at least within this talk, I will not be concerned with the issue of naturalness in the sense that I'm not going to be concerned whether there are new particles at the TV scale that cancel the Higgs quadratic divergence explicit. Okay, that at the first step, I just want to see, you know, whether, you know, I can try to cook up a KK parity in a warp extra dimensional setup. Okay. So a toy three-side model, just by looking at the low energy spectrum. So of course, since obviously, you know, the inspiration of this comes from the EED, in which there is a KK parity. So I find it very useful just to briefly review where does the KK parity come about in the UED type of setup. So in the end, what we want to do is to implement the KK parity in such a way that the KK parity is defined as minus 1 to the n, where n is a KK number. Okay, so in this case, the center model, which is 0 mod, is even, whereas the first KK mod is odd. Okay, this is just like the universal extra-dimensional model. So in other words, all the odd KK modes, they are KK odd. All the even KK modes, they are even. Okay, just like in the flat extra-dimensional case. And, you know, the UEDs, they have been very popular, and I think partly because the mass scale of the new particles, they can be very, very low, roughly 400 GeV, which would allow easy access at the LHC, okay? And so, of course, you ask, how can they have such a low mass scale? And the reason is because the first KK mode, since they are KKR, so they can have a low mass scale because, you know, they need to be pair-produced. And therefore, the correction to the precision electrically observables, they are loop suppressed. Okay, so that's the usual argument why KK UED can have such a low mass scale, 400 GeV. However, you know, there's a part of UED, there's part of the success of UED that is not, at least I personally, I think is not emphasized enough in the literature. In other words, what I want to remind you, there's more to the success of UED than just KK parity. And why is that? And the reason we can ask is because we can ask the following question. If the first KK mode is 400 GeV, and because the geometry is flat, so we know that the second KK mode has to be roughly 800 GeV. But the second KK mode is KK even. So in principle, it could be produced singly and coupled to a center model directly. So if that's the case, you can ask, why did the precision electrical constraint force the second KK mode to be at 3 TeV if it has unsuppressed coupling to the center model? This is just like the first KK gluon in the RS1 model has to be at between 3 and 4 TeV in order to satisfy the precision electrical constraint. And you can ask, you know, the second KK mode here is roughly, it's also even, and so in principle, KK parity doesn't suppress the coupling. So why isn't it forced to be at the 3 TeV? Okay, just like the first KK mode in the RS model. And the reason is because such coupling, the second KK mode coupling to the zero mode, they are indeed suppressed, but not due to KK parity, but due to the approximate KK number conservation. And personally, I think this is a point that is not emphasized enough in the literature. So people tend to focus on first KK mode, but you know, you really have to ask the same question, what about the second KK mode? Okay, why can it be at 800 GeV? And the reason is because it's due to KK number conservation. So what is KK number conservation? Roughly speaking, it's because, you know, the bulk geometry is a finite flat interval. And therefore, the momentum along the extra dimension is quantized. It goes like n over r, where n is the KK number. R is roughly the compactification scale. Okay, so because it's flat in the extra dimension, and so the momentum is conserved, and that implies that the KK number n plus n and n, they have to be conserved as well. Okay? So because of this KK number conservation, it forbids a single coupling of the second KK mode with two zero modes, such as this guy, and the coefficient it has to be zero because of the KK number conservation. However, you know, these people show that, you know, this momentum conservation is broken by interactions living on the two boundaries. And in other words, because the extra dimension is a flat interval, so you have two boundaries. So obviously, these two boundaries break the translational invariant along the extra dimension. So these people argue that, you know, even if you don't put in any boundary interaction at the tree level, it will be induced at the loop level. So you have to put it in. So in this case, if you assume these loop-induced boundary interaction are the only source of brand localized interaction, then the KK number is only broken up to at the one loop level. So that implies the coefficient is also loop suppressed, roughly 1 over 16 pi squared. And so that's the reason that the second KK mode, the interaction with the standard model is also loop suppressed, but it's not due to the KK parity. It's due to this approximate KK number conservation. Okay?
Can I just ask, so the reason, is the only reason that nobody, you couldn't
could imagine trying to live on a circle instead of an interval.
Right.
Chirality is somehow hard, right?
Right.
But since the effective theory has a cutoff at a TEV anyway,
mm-hmm.
I suspect you might even be able to get away with that somehow. But that's the reason, that's the only reason, right? There's nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a wild thought.
Yeah, I don't know how to put the character in.
But you know, some of the point is, from the low energy effective point of view, you've got an anomaly, but you've also got a TEV cutoff. So usually anomalies are not a problem.
No, but
anyway,
okay.
Don't worry. I'm sorry. It's a great talk.
Oh, thanks. I'm done. All right. So now, when it comes to work extra dimension, when we try to implement KK parity in the extra dimension. Not because the extra dimension now is curved, so it's not flat, so it's clear now there is not even approximate momentum conservation in the extra dimension. So we don't even have approximate KK number conservation. Okay? So that implies, in general, you know, the even KK mode, it needs to be heavier than 2 to 3 TeV in order to be consistent with precision electro wave measurement. Just like the first KK gauge boson in the usual RS model. But on the other hand, you know, we really want to lower the mass scale of the first part of KKMO. So on the other hand, we would really like to have an R KKMO at around 1 TeV or below.
That's just because you want to be able to see it.
Yes. Of course, but in the end, we want to use it to cut off the Higgs quadratic divergence.
Okay.
That's
yeah.
In the end, yeah. But that's something I will not get into at this level. Okay? So in UED, a first KKMO at 1 TeV and a second KKMO at 3 TeV is just not possible because the geometry is flat. It goes like N over R, okay? So if the second KKMO is the 3 TeV, that implies first KKMO has to be roughly at the 1.5 TeV. And the KK levels, they are roughly evenly spaced due to the flat background. But of course, the caveat here is the brand localizing directions are small, are loop induced. But that's the usual assumption people make in UED. But on the other hand, this is where, you know, warp extra dimension works as an advantage in that, you know, because the geometry is curved, so it's possible to have a small hierarchy between the odd and even KK mode. Okay? So in the end, what I'm trying to argue is that the desired low-energy spectrum looks like is that we would like to have a modest separation between the odd and even mode such that the first odd mode is roughly 1 TeV, the second even mode, the first even mode, has to be heavier than 3 TeV in order to satisfy the precision electrowave constraint. So that is the low-energy spectrum.
It doesn't look like
a
particularly modest separation.
Or, of course, modest in what respect? But then it will become clear why I call this modest.
Okay.
So is 1 TeV allowed?
If it's KKR, yes.
If it's single produced,
then it's forbidden.
Then it's forbidden.
Right.
But, so I thought that now.
Now, because the 1 TeV is R, so it has to be pair produced. If it's pair produced.
I thought that in a warped case, you don't have.
Yeah, but that's the point that I want to.
Yeah,
that's what I want to do.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's what I want to do.
Not
yes.
Yet done.
Not yet done. That's
okay.
Right. That's right.
Okay.
So, in fact, you know, an effective theory below 3 and 4 TeV, which would describe the zero mode as well as 1 KKR and KK even mode, maybe all that matter at the RC, since because, you know, 14 TeV central mass energy, you know, we can probably only produce, you know, particles up to 3 to 4 TeV anyway. So if that's the case, we can really just use an effective theory to describe, you know, 1 zero mode, 1 KKR mode, and 1 KK even mode, okay? In other words, I can just use a quote-unquote three-psi Moos model as an effective theory and impose a reflection asymmetry in that if I reflect these two boundary psi in A and C, that it has to be a symmetry, okay? And because of this Z2 reflection symmetry, that forced these two decay constants F to be the same. Moreover, it forced these two gauge couplings to be the same as well, okay? So this is just a low-energy effective theory to describe the first three modes here. And so now two Fs are the same and two couplings are the same. So I can work out easily the mass eigenvalues and eigenmodes of this three cymos model. So what happens, you know, I can define G0 as the zero mode gauge coupling as usual. It's the sum of 1 over G I squared, and this is a factor of 2 because I have the two contributions from these two boundary sides here. So this is indeed the usual zero mode gauge coupling.
So it's a product of three gauge groups, right?
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
And you have some bi fundamental.
Yeah,
or
so
something
yeah,
that's
the two. Yeah, that's what it means. Yes. That's right. Okay. So I can solve for the mass eigenvalue explicitly given that G and GB are the same, and these two, no, G, these two GAs are the same, and these two Fs are the same. So indeed, we find a masses mode, zero mode, and we can also find the eigenmodes, indeed, the zero mode, which is masses, is even with respect to the interchange of A and C. So the zero mode is even, okay? And the first exciting mode is GA times F, and the next one is GA squared plus 4GB squared times F. So you can see that, you know, this guy, of course, is always heavier than this guy. And moreover, the wave function corresponding to the first exciting mode is up under interchange of A and C, so it's an up.
F is the VAF of that?
Yeah, you can think of it as F. Yes,
exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So here, it's just explicitly that the first mode, massive mode, is up, and the first or the second mode, which is the first even mode, is even under interchange of A and C again. So that's just the mass eigenvalue, okay? So I'm going to be looking at
the... So is that the same evenness and oddness that you want? That
yeah, exactly. So the zero mode is even, just the standard model. The first excited mode is KKR, and the next one is even again. So think of it as...
So you say that two zeros cannot couple to that A minus... what forbids that? I guess I don't quite see.
Again, it's a Z2 reflection. It's because if one R mode, if you impose it as a symmetry, just like in SUSY, you know, you cannot have one superponder with two standard model particles. It's the same reason.
So you say there's an underlying Z2 symmetry
right.
in the setup that's
that I imposed
yeah.
in that
imposed,
way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So it's unbroken. It will be just one third of.
Yeah, in the end, it's just broken down to the diagonal.
Okay.
So that corresponds to this massless zero.
But this discrete symmetry, isn't it broken by that of those by Fs?
No. Because it's a...
It's
that's why you chose them to be equal, I
right,
guess.
Exactly.
B is neutral under this.
Yeah, B is neutral, right. So this GP can be anything. Right. So that's the two free parameters, GA
and
G. And
the scalars, they are neutral as well.
The scalars, they are mapped into each other. Right. These are the two scalars. So
okay.
They are mapped into each other under the...
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So there are two interesting limits I want to look at for the mass eigenvalue. So... Again, these are the mass eigenvalues. So I will first look at the first limit that when GA is much larger than GB. Okay, when GA is much larger than GB, you say that this mass eigenvalue is dominated by GA only. So in this case, the even mode is almost degenerate with the R mode when GA is much larger than GB. So when GA is much larger than GB, these two modes are almost degenerate and their mass splitting goes like parametric dependence goes like GB squared over GA squared. That's the first limit. The second limit is when GA is much smaller than GB. When GA is much smaller than GB, you can see that this mass eigenvalue is dominated by GB, which is, again, much larger than this R mode. So in other words, when GA is much smaller than GB, there's a hierarchy between the even mode and R mode that goes like the ratio of GB over GA. Okay, that's the two interest limit I want to focus on.
There is a sum here. 1 plus 2.
1 plus. That's true.
Yeah, good.
So all I switch this plus and minus. Okay. So what does this mean? So if we try to think of the three-side model as a deconstruction of the warp extra dimension, okay, and this is time. So a smaller gauge coupling at the site would imply actually a higher strong coupling locally. Okay, because if at the site the coupling, the gauge coupling is smaller, that means at the scale for the coupling that becomes strong would have can be higher. Okay, so using the idea of holographic arch, this implies a site with a smaller gauge coupling would have a higher local cutoff, and therefore it would correspond to the UV region in the warp extra dimension. On the other hand, a site with a larger gauge coupling, it would have a slower local cutoff, so that would correspond to the IR region of the warp extra dimension. Okay.
I guess I haven't been able to put that together in my head. Can you explain that once more?
It's just like in the usual IS model, when you have one UV brand and one IR brand,
yes,
and then you can work it out, and all the scales locally, they have to be warped.
Yes.
So that means at the UV brand, and the local cutoff could be at roughly the Planck scale, whereas when you go to the IR brand, the local cutoff is only at the TeV scale.
Right.
That's all I'm trying to say.
But you're talking here about not about cutoffs, but couplings.
No. Yeah. So all I'm here just trying to use it as a suggestive way of saying that if there's a smaller coupling, that implies the local cutoff is higher. Right, because the gauge coupling at low energy is weaker, so it takes longer to run to a strong coupling. Therefore, your cutoff can be higher.
Oh.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So, in other words, the first case, GA much larger than GB, GA much larger than GB, will correspond to an IR, UV, IR deconstruction, whereas the second case, GA much smaller than GB, will correspond to a UV, IR, UV deconstruction. So that's what we learned from the three-side picture. That is, if we somehow have an IR, UV, IR type of warp factor, then we would find that even in AMOS, they're almost degenerate. Whereas if we have an UV, IR, UV type of warp factor, then the even mode can be significantly heavier than the AMO. So coming back to the Jack's question is, because in one case, they are almost degenerate, that I call factor of three in Mardy's separation between the even and normal. Okay. So furthermore, it's just, if we take the ratio of the gauge coupling to be the log of the UV scale over IR scale, then, which again, we can try to argue using holographic RG, then the deconstruction even gets the right parametric dependence of the mass splitting, in the sense that, the ratio of the even to AMO is that go like 1 plus 1 over the log of the mass scale, whereas in the second case, the ratio of the mass scale goes like square root of log of the UV scale over IR scale. And just to remind you that usually when people try to explain the Planck gauge hierarchy, we need this log to be roughly 30. And if that's the case, splitting is only 1 in 30. So you see that they are really, really just pretty much degenerate, whereas the mass ratio here is square root of 30 is roughly between the factor of 5 and 6. Yeah.
The goal is to get the first mode around TV.
Right.
And the second.
Right.
And couldn't you just try to use the Randall syndrome type scenario, without deconstructing to adjust the solution, to adjust the background.
Right.
Really, to reproduce this spectrum that you want.
Yeah, so in the end, that's what I'm going to do in the next section. I'm going to use a real extra dimensional setup, just like Randall Sundran, to reproduce this spectrum.
Solve with respect to the background.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do next.
To reproduce the one TV.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm going to do that next. Okay, so let me come to a real extra dimensional setup now that we get some idea using the three-side model. Okay, so
you did say that the ultraviolet IR ultraviolet has problems.
Yeah, I would.
That's the one you want. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
So that, in the sense that that's the one that will produce a nice separation between even and normal. Yes, good. But I will come to that. So now first is the IR UVIR setup. So of course, so just to show you the coordinate system I'm using the warp factor here, A of Y, and I'm gonna take the range of Y to be from minus L to plus L, just because I want to impose a reflection symmetry in y goes to minus y. So if I want to impose a Z2 reflection symmetry in y goes to minus y, that implies the dependence of this work factor in y has to be only on the absolute value of y.
Yeah.
Okay? And moreover, we are looking for any slack-dual geometry in that the work factor is exponential in y near the UV region. So there are two obvious possibilities. So all we have to do is take the original RS1 model where we have one UV and one IR brain. So I can either reflect with respect to the UV brain here. So this way I get the IR, UV, IR setup. Or I reflect with respect to the IR brain here. Then I get the IR, UV, IR setup. So in terms of pictures, these are the two obvious possibilities that I'll be looking at. So essentially it's a three-brain setup in this context that it's the IR, UV, IR setup and the work factor just goes like this. And whereas the UV, IR, UV setup, the work factor just goes like this. Okay? So I can just solve the KK spectrum exactly given the background. The work factor like these two.
They are not identified.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Because in the usual RS model, you do an orbifold projection, then these two are really identified. So here we are just taking the usual RS but not doing the orbifold projection. That's the one way to look.
Okay, even though you're opposing the Z2 symmetry?
I'm sorry?
You still want to oppose
the Z2 only impose symmetry. Z2 symmetry, but I'm not projecting out any mode that is R under the orbifold. Usually when people talk about doing orbifold projection, you project out any mode that is R under the orbifold. But here I'm not doing that. Right. Okay. So first focus on the IR, UV, IR setup for now. Okay, so just to remind you, this is the IR, UV, IR setup for now. Okay? So by continuity of wave functions in the middle, which is the UV side, now the KKR modes, they must be zero at the UV. That it's just that the R wave function has to be zero in the middle, okay? And therefore, it must have equivalent a Dirichlet boundary condition on the UV brain. On the other hand, the KK even modes, they must have normal boundary condition in the middle. That is, they must have normal boundary condition on the on UV brain. And moreover, to get a massless zero mode, all we have to do is to just like usually impose normal boundary condition on the two boundary side, which is the normal boundary condition on the two IR brains here.
They must be odd, right? The odd modes must vanish
in the middle.
Because they are
right.
Odd.
So that's what I'm saying, right? So the R, so this is IR, U. So the R mode must be like this, so it must be zero in the middle. So that's what I said. But I can still impose the normal boundary condition on these two boundary sets. Okay? And whereas the even mode, it must have a normal boundary condition in the middle. Okay? So in the usual RS jargon, the zero mode and the KK even mode, they have a plus plus boundary condition. Plus means normal. So means the boundary condition at UV and the IR. Even more has plus boundary condition, whereas the R more has minus plus boundary condition because it has the Dirichlet boundary condition on the UV and normal boundary condition on the IR. That's just in the usual RS jargon. So we solved the spectrum explicitly given this background, and we confirmed the intuition from the three-side model that the first KKR and the even more, they are degenerate. Okay. And as explained, this is undesirable from the phenomenological point of view. And we could try to understand the degeneracy of these two modes in the extra-dimensional setup in the following way. And I just explained to you the difference in the even and R modes are the boundary condition on the UV side. Okay, one is Neumann, the other is Dirichlet. But the low-lying massive modes, they have profiles localized near the IR brain. So most of the profile are in the IR brain. And this implies that it shouldn't be sensitive to whatever boundary condition you have on the UV because it has very, very small overlap with the UV. Okay? And that's why the mass eigenvalue is insensitive to this difference in the boundary condition in the UV. That's why roughly these two modes, they are degenerate. Okay? And therefore, given this picture, in order to break the degeneracy, we must somehow push the KK profiles away from the IR brain and more toward the UV brain. This way, it can be more sensitive to the boundary condition in the UV. And it turns out this is exactly what an IR brain localized kinetic term would give you, in the sense that the brain localized term make the brain opaque. And this is done by these people back in the O2. Okay? So from this argument, we expect that an IR brain localized kinetic term would separate the even and armor, whereas the UV brain kinetic term would make them even more degenerate. And in fact, because the profile that exponentially suppressed near the UV, so we need very, very large brain localized term on the IR in order to create a small separation, in order to break the degeneracy here. So here, just to show you what the five-dimensional action I'll be using here, and again, y is integrated from minus L to L, and I'm defining this the brain localized term with the strength is RIR here, and this is RUV here. Okay? So what we find is that the spectrum of the gauge boson, it consists of two interlacing towers, the KK even and the KKR modes. Moreover, there is always a massive mode in the even tower. Okay? And just in this regard, it's just like the usual RS story that the two towers, they are roughly evenly spaced starting at the KK mass scale, which is K times e to the minus KL.
In this setup, you need to put some cosmological terms on.
Yeah, that's just like in the usual RS story. Right?
So this metric satisfies.
Yeah, yeah. It's a solution to the Einstein equation. Yes. Okay.
And moreover, we found that each tower has a parametrically lighter massive mode. So if RIR is very large, larger than L, 1 over K, we find that the first R mode is suppressed with respect to the usual KK mass scale by 1 over K times RIR. Okay? Whereas for the first even mode, it's heavier than the first R mode by a factor of RIR plus L over L. So for now, I can just set the RUV to be 0. Because I only want the IR to create separation between the even and armor. Okay? So it turns out that for very, very large brain IR term, KIR is much larger than KL, then the ratio of the even mode to the armor is roughly square root of IR over L.
Okay? So that's the effect of this very large IR brain localized term. So just to give you some idea, so if we require modest separation in the even mode, then the even mode is 3 TeV and R mode is 1 TeV. So given K times L is 35, and the ratio of even over R is factor of 3, then we found that K times IR has to be roughly order 300. Okay? And schematically, the KK spectrum looks like, at the low energy, you have a 0 mode in the even power, and the first mode is R, that is roughly 1 TeV, and the second mode, the first even mode, is roughly 3 TeV, and then starting from the KK mass scale, which is roughly between 10 and 20 TeV, you see this roughly evenly spaced KK tower come in. So that's roughly the spectrum look like in this setup. Okay. And moreover, the zero mode profile is constant, just like in the usual, and the normalization is dominated by the IR brain localized term, which is 2 times RIR. And it turns out this is also the zero mode gauge coupling that we measured that has to be matched to the standard model gauge coupling. Okay? So from this relation, you might have the question, if we need very large IR brain kinetic term, that is, if we need very large RIR, but G0 is fixed to what we measure, into the standard model coupling. So a large RIR will imply a large G5 as well. So this implies that you need a very large 5D gauge coupling, and then we might worry about the 5D productivity if you have a large 5D gauge coupling. So we can estimate at what scale does the 5D gauge coupling become strong. Okay? So we did the estimate, and we tried to be conservative and use only 4D loop factor, 1 over 16 pi squared. And that's the final expression. So let me just plug in the number. Let me use standard model gauge coupling G0 squared to be roughly 1/2. And I'm only demanding a ratio of 2 for the even and up mode. If I take K times L to be roughly 30, then we find that, the lambda, the 5D strong coupling scale, is right at the MKK scale, which is between 20 and 30 TeV. Okay?
So this is saying that, you know, if we want to require a protective 5D description at the onset of evenly spaced KKMOS, which is 20 to 30 TeV, we have to give up explaining the Plunkett hierarchy in the sense that we cannot use such a large K times L.
Okay?
So this is certainly a drawback comparing to the original RS1, but an improvement over the UEDs in the sense that we can at least address the flavor scale at 1,000 TeV and above.
So you assume fermions in the box?
Yeah, yes, that's right. So I will come to fermion.
Right. Can you go back to that last sentence again somehow? Why 1,000? Where did the 1,000 come from? I guess I haven't quite got that.
1,000 TeV, I think, is from the KL mixing. Is that what you were asking? Or
Yeah. So how did you get from 3 TeV?
I'm sorry. This is the scale of the location of the UV brain, essentially. Initially, in the usual RS model, the location of the UV brain is at the Planck scale. Here I'm saying that in order to avoid the 5D strong coupling, I have to move the UV brain to a lower energy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm saying that we can safely put the UV brain at 1,000 TeV scale or a little bit higher. That's what I'm saying. So
how do I know that? Is that where it is for your green scenario, green choices there? Where is the UV?
And the UV scale is determined by K times L,
right,
because this is the exponential suppression factor.
Right,
so I need to use a smaller K times L.
Yeah, okay, that's what
right.
I'm confused
right.
about. You have to use a much smaller.
Right, I have to use a smaller
K
times L.
If you did that, what would happen to M1 minus over M? Oh, I guess that's independent, you're saying.
Right, so it goes here. If I use a smaller one, I can raise lambda, but I can still fix the MKK here. So I can have more KK modes, even in space, can come up below the 5D strong coupling scale.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The natural source of brain kinetic terms,
right,
I guess, are actually perturbative and loop corrections. Isn't that true?
That's not what we are assuming here. So,
because you want to have.
No, right. So you ask, how do I get a large brain localized term? Yeah. So there are ways to get it, but obviously it depends on, you know, specific mechanism that you do it, but people look at this before, like in DGP model, they have very large brain localized graphitone kinetic terms. So they in their paper, they gave an example of how you could come up with such a large term. But that... I can easily imagine it's the same mechanism you can come up with it. But I can talk about this, you know, after the talk. So we can also look at the profiles of the first odd and even modes. So it turns out that on the IR brain, the first odd mode couples much like the standard model, a zero mode gauge coupling on the IR brain, whereas for the even mode on the UV brain, the coupling is enhanced with respect to the zero mode coupling by a ratio of even over odd mode, whereas the coupling of the even mode on the IR brain is suppressed with respect to the zero mode coupling, again, by a ratio of odd mode over even mode. And so this is just the words of what I said. The even mode coupling to the IR brain is suppressed relative to zero mode, whereas the coupling to the UV brain is enhanced. And it's easy to understand this because the brain, IR brain kind of pushes the profile away from the IR and toward the UV. That's why the coupling to the UV brain is enhanced, whereas the coupling to the IR is suppressed. Okay? And it turns out this observation has very important implications that I would talk about when I come to the fermions here. So again, for the fermions, one bulk field consists of two bulk fields in the conventional RS1 language in the sense that they have both the plus-plus and minus-plus mode. And suppose we choose the boundary condition such that the zero mode is left-handed, then by choosing the bulk mass, this C parameter here, then we can have a separation between the first KKR mode and the KK even mode. And this is just the usual story in the RS that if you have a C larger than minus 1/2, then the armor is roughly at MKK. But however, if you choose C less than minus 1/2, then it's an exponential suppression with respect to the MKK scale. Okay? And it's also easy to understand why you can have this suppression for the KK armor once C is larger than less than minus 1/2. And this because it, this
exponential suppressed mode is actually would be zero mode
in the following sense. But the I told you the R mode again has minus plus boundary condition in the it has dirichlet boundary condition on the UV. Whereas the zero mode has plus plus boundary condition. Okay? And when C is less than minus 1/2, it turns out the zero mode has a profile that is very sharply peaked in the IR. Then again, if the zero mode has a profile very sharply peaked in the IR, then it doesn't care whether the boundary condition in the UV is plus or minus. So if you change the boundary condition from plus to minus in the UV, again, you produce a whoopee zero mode, which is very light. Okay? And so from the naturalist point of view, if we were to use this setup to stabilize the Higgs mass, that means, you know, well, we want to use the top KK mode to cut off the Higgs quadrature divergence. That means the top KK mode has to be light at the 1 TV below. But on the other hand, this is good because the top KK mode, we usually require top quark to be localized near the IR, which automatically give you a very light top KK mode. Okay? And then for light fermions, usually in the conventional RS1, they have C greater than 1/2, and they are localized near the UV. And this has very nice feature of naturally accommodates the Yukawa hierarchy and flavor symmetry and in the RS1 model. But it turns out in our case that if we have light fermions living near the UV, this gives us some trouble because remember, the coupling of the first even mode to the UV brain is enhanced. So that means if we have light fermion localized in the UV, then the coupling of the even first even mode to the standard model fermion will be enhanced. So then the strength of the induced, so is the strength of this induced flavor-conserving four fermion operated by integrating out this even KK mode. So it turns out the constraint from this four fermion operator would require the first KK R mass to be heavier than few TeV. Okay? So what we have to do here is to have light fermion not too close to UV. And by not too close to UV, we mean that we have to have C roughly between 0.5 and 0.55. in order to satisfy the constraint. So in this sense that we will not be able to explain the Yukawa hierarchy through localization of fermions, it has to be attributed to 5D parameters. And we may be able to bring the flavor violation in the bulk under control for such a C parameter, but one could ask, what about the brain localized flavor violation, given that we assume very large IR brain localized term? And obviously, this depends on the detail of the original of the brain localized term. And one sentence summary is that, you know, we just need additional mechanism to address the flavor problem, and that just means that, you know, that there's more model building opportunities here. So that was very roughly the IR UV IR setup. Okay, so in order to create separation between the even and AMO, we need very large IR localized term. So now let me come to the UV IR UV setup. And this again,
back to sort of Bogdan's question, is there any model building reason to support such large localized brain kinetic terms?
Yeah, so again,
wants to talk about after
that. Right. Like I say, you know, it really depends on what the detail of the what mechanism, like what gives you such a large IR brain localized. But yes, so...
So are you saying there are mechanisms out there that...
Yes. All I'm saying is I know it's the same mechanism that people in the DGP model, they assume such a large brain localized term.
But again, you use the word assume there, you know, so...
Well, assume in the sense that, you know, just how big it is, it's a number you put in, right? You can have a mechanism to localize a kinetic term on the IR brain. But by assuming how big it is, I think that's the parameter you put in. That's what I mean.
And such a thing doesn't do something like distort the brains or break down the approximation or anything like that.
It makes the brain.
What? No, it does.
It makes the brain.
Yeah, it does. It does distort the profile of the wave function.
The brains themselves, there's no.
But okay, yeah. So let
in the RS models, you have to have some mechanism for establishing the brains in the first place, right? You know, under.
Yeah, but that's just the usual case. Whenever you have a brain, you always ask that question.
Right. Yeah. So I'm asking, you know, if you had a Goldberg or Weiss mechanism or something like that, you put on these big infrared localized frame terms, is that going to cause problems for that mechanism? Or?
Well, the at least for global guys, it's in the gravitational sector. Here, I'm only putting the gauge connector.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I don't think that would do anything.
But you will not address the question of localization.
Yeah, for now, I'm just saying, you know, my philosophy here, let's just see, you know, what it takes to get it work. And I'm telling you, this is what it takes to create such a separation.
Since we discussed, I mean, you use this step function, the mass that is y dependent, right? The Fermi
right.
mass. And the motivation for that is a scalar profile, right? That is odd.
Right.
So it's a simplification. You don't want to consider the real dynamic scale of that.
No, of course. But again, I'm saying this issue is not unique to us. This issue is unique to any Fermi in the box in the RS model.
Yeah, of course. It's just, I always never lie.
And I have nothing to say on this. I'm reading. Okay?
So this is the UV-IR-EV setup, and this is the wall factor, what it looks like. So again, we saw the spectrum. In this background, we confirm the intuition from the three-side model that there is a natural suppression between the even and odd modes in the gauge sector. Okay? And however, it turns out the gravity sector of this setup is very troublesome. In that the IR brain in the middle, it has a negative tension. Okay? So as a result, the radium is a ghost. Okay? And in the original RS1, this is not a problem because this ghost is projected out by the orbifold projection. But here, we're not doing that. So this is the ghost mode that is not projected out because the negative tension brain in the middle. So we have to address that. And of course, one could try to say, oh, let me add a very large IR brain connector for the graviton as well in order to overcome the negative tension brain, the effect coming from negative tension. So, but, you know, again, people have argued that, you know, if you do, this is just very much like the DGP models, and people argue that in DGP model, the ghost persists. Okay, so it doesn't really seem to solve the problem. And one alternative to get rid of the IR brain in the middle. And in order to get rid of the IR brain in the middle, we have to consider wall factor such as like a Koch here. So Koch wall factor is two brains on the side, and the Koch factor just goes like this. So it has roughly the same effect as what we want. So again, but then you have to ask, can we find such a metric that is actually a solution to the five-dimensional Einstein equation of motion? So it turns out Shinji Mukuyama, back in the 2000, he found that if you put in a conformal scalar in the box, and then this Koch can actually be a solution to the five-dimensional Einstein equation of motion. But the price you pay is that in this case, the T55 component of the stress energy tensor is negative is because there is a Kashner energy, which we all know it's a negative energy source, okay? And this is the price you pay. And so, but then again, you ask, in this case, can I stabilize these two brains? And so this group analyzed the radium potential in this case and found that the radium is a tachyon. That means the two brains are not stabilized. And it's easy to understand why it's a tachyon, because it's a Casimir force between these two brains, and we know the Casimir force is an attractive force. So the Casimir force is making these two brains moving toward each other, and that's why in the radium picture you see that the radium is tachyon. Okay, so it's not clear that this tachyon can be stabilized at all. And there's a deeper reason for all these trouble in the sense that a quote unquote C theorem can be proved that, you know, in order to have a UVIR UV like wall factor, weak energy condition must be violated. So in the Shinji setup, you know, the weak energy condition obviously violated by the Casimir energy. It's the T55 component. And so that's why we're having so much trouble. You know, as always, there's a such setup, something has to be wrong. And a related pathology has to do with the ultralight graviton in this setup. It turned out that there's an ultralight graviton, and we know that massive graviton suffer from very low cutoff. You know, it goes like mg squared times m Planck to the 1/3 power. So to sum up, even though the gauge sector has a very desirable spectrum phonologically, there is an instability in the gravity sector that we just don't know how to deal with. Okay? So let me just finish up with some discussion, conclusion, outlook. So we have tried implementing KK parity in warp extra dimension, and the motivation is may bring down the mass scale of the new particles, allowing them to be more accessible at the LHC. And two obvious possibilities are gluing two identical copies of ADS-Phi either in the UV region, which we call the IR-UV-IR setup, or in the IR region, which we call UV-IR-UV setup. And the UV-IR-UV setup suffer from instability in the gravity sector, and from this perspective, the IR-UV-IR setup seems more promising. But we need the price you pay, we need large IR per localized term. And in the IR-UV-IR setup, we may need to lower the scale of the UV brain in order to lift the 5D strongly coupled scale above this NKK, which is tens of TeV. And flavor issues also need to be addressed with the additional mechanism that we do not talk about here. And in terms of collider signature, this warp KK parity is the hybrid of UD and RS1 in the sense that the first KK modes needs to be pair produced and the LKB could be adopted a candidate, and this is very much like UED. But on the other hand, the KK masses, they are not evenly spaced, so this is very much like the RS1 model. So it's a hybrid of these two. And it's also interesting to consider the CFT dual of our setup, a measure as the guide to implement T parity in the so-called holographic Higgs or gauge Higgs unification. And the CFT dual may also help realize UV completion of T parity in the little Higgs without resorting to supersymmetrized linear sigma model about 10 TeV. So, you know, obviously much work remains to be done. So I will just stop right here.
I may ask one more.
Sure.
Why are you saying that this CFT dual should have something to do with gauge Higgs unification?
Or in the sense, it's gauge Higgs in the sense that you really consider the Higgs as the A5 I was more thinking of that in terms of, So here I'm not talking about the flat space gauge Higgs unification. I'm more thinking about gauge Higgs in the warp setup. Yeah.
So, I think that in an RS setup, dynamical gravity doesn't really have anything to do with solving the hierarchy problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see that, your deconstructed setup, there was no problem with gravity,
right?
But suddenly you get into this problem with in RS, and it's because you have gravity as this dynamical thing in five dimensions and so on.
Right.
However, if you just take your RS setup and turn off gravity,
right.
There's nothing wrong. Now, if you take that and turn on gravity, but not 5D gravity, you just couple 4D gravity to your KK modes.
Right.
Okay? That's also, there's nothing wrong until you get
sure.
To
so in, yeah. So in,
so
in,
you know, I as far as I'm concerned, I don't really think you should worry too much about that.
No. Yeah. So what Marcus is saying that I can implement quote unquote KK parity only in the standard model sector, but not in the gravity sector. Because in that case, the gravity will not have this even and out mode, etc. It's just purely ordinary gravity.
The only disadvantage of that scenario is that you'll make Lisa Randall angry, because they. And I don't know about Robin. I think he'll be less angry, but because I don't really think that RS in that sense predicts RS a little bit more widely looked at really predicts KK gravitons.
So in what sense is this actual dimension?
No, but what Marcus is saying that
things live in it, in the sense that these gravitons and things live in it.
So sure.
Gauge bosons. He needs
yeah.
Gauge bosons to live in it because
yeah.
He wants to. Right?
So Marker is just saying I can put two copies of whatever gauge sector and make them Z2 symmetric in the RS type of gravitational setup or whatever, you know. So yeah, so we can certainly do that, but all we're saying our motivation just to, you know, assume that there is also the same story in the gravity sector and push as far as we can and see what we encounter. And here, basically I'm saying that, you know, if you do the same thing in the gravity sector, this is what you would encounter.
Yeah, I mean, if you just don't put anything in the bulk, you just have a theory where everything, the original RS scenario, everything lived on the IR brain, right? And that looks like a miracle. You don't have anything in the bulk, right? Because gravity is not dynamical. Well, that's fine. And that theory also has a cutoff of the TEV. So that theory is equivalent to having the standard model with a cutoff of the TEV. It's not terribly interesting.
It's comfortable that you have like metric for X dimension, but don't have gravity.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what you have in a deconstructed case. So
in the construct, you don't have any gravity. Yeah, just have fully gravity.
Okay, I remember there's another problem in the UVI setup, forget about gravity problem. The light fermion is a problem. So that's another problem. In that case, light fermion, if they are localized, again, but that's assuming your light fermion is localized in the UV.
Mm.
Then your KK mode of the light fermion, again, it's C equals less than minus 1/2. So you have a very light KK mode. So the first KK mode of electron could be lighter than the Z, for example. So all you have to do is to move it away from the UV again. But then you give up explaining the Ekau hierarchy using this localization of fermion. So that's yes. And that's a similar problem you guys observe in the little M theory, for example.
So how close to the IR does it have to be fermions?
In what setup?
In the single IR.
In the single IR2EV, that you mean the sick setup?
It's not sick. Just forget about gravity.
I think we looked at it in the very beginning, but I can't pull off the number. Right? But obviously, it's just like, you know, C has to be larger than minus 1/2. It's the same story in usual RS. The point is, if C is less than minus 1/2, you have an exponentially suppressed fermion mode. I think that's also the case in the Higgs-less theory. And you just have to avoid that, make that KK mode heavier than whatever it has to be.
Thank you again.